And we're holding on Tzadik Hei Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Mishahayad Nasi Beis Nashim, a man was married to two wives, now he sold a field that was meshugged for the ksubas, and now there's not enough to collect both. Now, of course, they're allowed to collect from the chasim shabadim. They're going to be able to collect from that field, but let's say that there's not enough in that field to pay off both ksubas. So we know, as we learned in the previous Mishnah, that the first wife is going to have precedence over the second one. But what happens is, in this case, the twist is, the first wife wrote a document, the one that the husband married first, wrote out a document to the lekeach saying, I have no arguments with you over this, meaning, in other words, in effect, she's waving her shibud to this field. She's saying to the buyer, if it comes to collecting my ksuba, I agree with this document that I'm not going to take it away from you. You can keep it and I'll collect my ksuba some other way. But the second one did not do that. So now what happens is, so now the second one is able to take it away from the lekeach, because after all, she didn't write out any such thing. So when the husband dies, then the second wife can take it away from the lekeach because she didn't write out any such document waiving her rights. But v'rishonim and ashniyah. But now what happens is the first one can take it from the second one because she can say, listen, my shibud comes before yours. And I agreed I'm not going to take it away from the lekeach. Doesn't mean I can't take it away from you. Then the lekeach is going to take it from the first one because after all, she wrote him out a document saying that she's waiving her rights for him. And they're going to go round and round. Now, remember, Foshim say doesn't literally mean we're going to go round and round necessarily. I mean, there's a Rashi on Amud Beis in a related case, which is Mashma, that maybe we do. But the Ritva says, no, come on. I mean, we're going to bother Beis Din every time that this is going to happen, and Beis Din is going to have to deal with the case every time. We don't do that. So what it means is it would go round and round. In other words, Beis Din is going to tell them, you have to realize that if you do that, it's going to go round and round, until they come to some kind of agreement between themselves. For example, they might at some point make the agreement that they might make the agreement, let's say, that the two women are going to have the field and split it between them in whatever way to satisfy their ksubas, and the lekeach, they'll give him a little money to make up for his trouble, or they might make a deal that the lekeach will be able to keep it, and the two wives will get there, will find some other way to collect their ksuba, etc. They can whatever they arrange between themselves. But the point is, if they don't make such an arrangement, then this kind of thing is going to go on indefinitely.
We don't say that once he leaves the lekeach's, once he leaves the owner's field and he goes to the second wife, that he's off and that's it, gone. Then, if the first wife takes it from the second one, has not the shibud off because he lost his field.
No, because we don't say that. The fact is, since she wrote dinu dvorim ein le'imach on this field, then it means, in other words, he still has an argument against her. You Rishona end up with this field, but you agreed that you weren't going to take the field. So the fact that there was somebody else in between doesn't matter. We are going to have a case on Amud Beis, a somewhat similar case, where there we're going to say that actually we don't. It stops at one point. But here we're talking about that the Gemara is going to end up pointing out that in our case over here, if we stop at some point, somebody is losing out. As opposed to a case that we're going to talk about on Amud Beis involving Yerusha, which is basically when you get down to it, you don't put anything in order to get a Yerusha. So therefore somebody doesn't end up losing out necessarily. Here you have either the wives are supposed to collect their ksubas and they put something in after all, they did get married, and the lekeach, of course, put in money. So we're going to say that's choza choliva. It's going to go round and round. We talked about earlier in the perek, we talked about yesterday actually, and we touched on it also at the beginning of the perek. The question is, when you have a later Baal Choyv collects ahead of an earlier one, is that valid or not? The halacha is that it's not. So So the Tevah explains that that also bears on our din over here. We wouldn't say, for example, if the second one collected it, we would say, okay, Masha Govsa Govsa, what she collected is collected, and now the first one has no more recourse. No, the first one still has every right to tell the second one, you know what, my Shibud comes ahead of yours, and you have no right to collect this field at all, and therefore she does. But then the Lekeach says to her, 1 second, what are you doing with this field in your possession? You agreed that you're not going to take it away, and so forth. So the Gemara starts off. Now, you're telling me that if she writes out saying, Dinu Dvarim Ein Le'imach, then that's valid. Why should that be valid? So what that she wrote that out? How is she waiving her rights with that? V'hotanya, we learned in a Braisa. We learned this previously also because we had previously in the Masechta that at the beginning of the 8th Perek, we had the case where the husband writes to the wife, Dinu Dvarim Ein Le'bin Chasayich, where he says, I'm not getting into any arguments over your nechosim, and we talked about what that means in terms of payrus and so forth, and v'hatanya, we learn in a braisa. If one person says to the other, I have no dinu dvorim on this field, the emli esek bar, or he uses the expression, I don't have any business with this field, or v'yodim selekas hemena, or he says, my hands are withdrawn from it, lo yama klum. In all those cases, what he said doesn't count for anything. All of those could be more like he's expressing a wish. I wish I had nothing to do with this field. Or even if we say that it constitutes a form of, mechila, he's only being mechil on part of the shibud. Sort of, we talk about there about a longer sector that there's two different aspects of shibud: the shibud on the karka and a personal shibud. So he's only waiving one of those, but not the other. But Tosfos over there, when we learned about it on Daf Pei Gimel, called it loshen garua. That it's a weak kind of lashon. If he actually meant to say that I'm waiving my rights in this field and you have full rights to it, let's say we're talking about partners and one of them wants to give his part to the other one, so then he would use a lashon, I'm actually giving it to you. He wouldn't use such weak expressions as dinu dvarim ein li'al sadazu. Which Tosfos points out, by the way, that we learned in that Mishnah on Pei Gimel, we had the case where on Daf Ayin Ches, we talked about you can have a woman who's an arusa and she sells nichsim log of hers, that it's valid. So over here also the fact is she doesn't have this property in her possession yet. It's only going to come into her possession after when the ksuba is ready to be paid out. So why shouldn't a loshen like that work? And so Tosfos says, because the fact is that's just it. And Arusa, we know, because the property is not yet at all in the reshus of the husband, as far as Paris, therefore, we said over there that B'di'evan, she may not be supposed to sell it of Achila, but B'di'evan, we said according to Beis Hillel, if she does, then it's valid. Over here, the fact is the husband can't sell it without her having rights to take it away from the buyer, eventually to pay off the ksuba. So therefore, it's more similar to the case of where she's it's more similar to the case of him writing her such a document when she's already married. So here it's she that's writing the document, but the same thing. The point is the Gemara is assuming that it doesn't really have much validity. So why are we even talking about that she's waived her rights anyway if we're saying that it doesn't really have that, if it doesn't really have that strength? And the answer is the Gemara says, Hoch Mayaskinin Vishakonu Miyoda. Because we're not just talking about over here that she wrote out something saying dinu dvarim ein le'imach. They actually made a kinyan on it. And when we discussed this concept before in Pei Gimel, we said that if they make a kinyan, then that strengthens it. And now we say they didn't just make a shibud of a, they didn't just make an agreement of words. They actually made a shibud. They actually made a kinyan on the goof of the character itself, of the land itself, and therefore that in fact it is effective. So that's what we're talking about over here. Not just that she wrote out, you know, Dvarim Ein Le'imach, she actually made a kinyan to confirm it. So the Gemara asks, if he konu miyodah my habi.
So if this kinyan was made, so then we understand the first one is out, but right. Why can't the second one get it?
Well, that's the thing. The second one can get it from the Lekeach because she didn't make any deal, but the first right. one still didn't waive her rights completely to the character. All she did is she waived her rights that she won't take this character from the Lekeach. Well, she's not taking it from the Lekeach.
You say they made a kinyan.
They made a kinyan that she won't take it from the Lekeach. They didn't make a kinyan that she won't take it from the other wife.
Uh-huh. So it doesn't make completely... Okay.
Right, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, still, even if they made a kinyan from her, so what? Tema nachas rocha sisi labayli. Can't she argue that the only reason I did that is in order to make nachas ruach for my husband, meaning, in other words, that she's saying, why did I agree to waive my rights? Because I know my husband plans to sell this field, and I didn't want to interfere because it would cause friction between me and him. It would ruin our shalom bias. So therefore, so I did that, and therefore, but that doesn't mean that she actually meant to waive her rights. Now, there is a point in Bava Basra where we learn that even if a person sells a field, even ba'oinis, then nevertheless it's a valid sale. So why over here would her argument of nachas ruach hasisi labayli carry any weight? First of all, Rashi says that the Gemara in Bava Basra there explains that primarily we're talking about either a field, about some kind of field that has a special connection to her. Namely, we know, of course, that there's a shibud on all his fields to pay off her ksuba, but there is, you have a field that he designated and actually wrote into the ksuba that this field is reserved for her to collect her ksuba. It's called Sada Sheyichid Lo B'Ksubasa, or that he designated it in a separately in front of Edim or something, or in a separate shtar, or that he wrote it into the ksuba, or that it's a field that she herself brought into the marriage as nichse belug or nichse tzon barzel, rather as nichse tzon barzel. So any of those three are primarily the ones we're talking about where she can say nachas ruach hasisi labayli. Although the Gemara ends up saying over there that really it does apply to other fields as well, just that with those three, the sale will be bottled right away, as we're going to say. With the other ones, it would be bottled when she comes to collect it. But in any case, the argument nachas ruach al sisi labayli. So the Rashbam over there talks about in Bava Basra that over there it's not that here it's not really such a big oinus as we're talking about over there. And then Ramban says the difference is because here she didn't receive any money from it, implying that if she actually had received money for it, then she wouldn't be able to cancel it. But in any case, the question is the argument nachas ruach al sisi labayli would mean that she's saying, I didn't actually mean to give up my rights to this field. I was just doing that in order to say at the time that I'm not interfering with the sale in order that my husband doesn't get upset. After all, continues the Gemara, Miloy Tnan, don't we learn a Mishnah and get into that effect? Lokach mina ish v'chaz v'lokach mina isha. If a potential lekeach buys the field from the husband and then buys it again from the wife, so again he goes and arranges with the wife, mekhe bottle, then the sale is bottle. So again, it would mean it's bottle right away. Rashi says we're talking about one of the three fields that we said before. That's in the Gemara in Bava Basra, then further explains that in the case of other fields, it won't be bottle right away, but she still will be able to collect on her shibud from it after her husband dies or divorces her. Which shows that she's able to make such an argument. She's able to say, yes, you lekeach even arranged it with me, but the problem is you arranged it with my husband first that you're going to buy this field. Now, once he had already agreed to sell this field, I didn't want to interfere because I didn't want to cause friction in our marriage. So therefore I agreed as well, but not that in fact that I agreed to it voluntarily. And therefore I say that the sale should be bottle. And then, so in the case of one of the three fields, it would be bottle right away. And in the case of any other field, it would mean I retain my shibud over it. Which Tosfos points out. Now, the Mishnah does say over there, if he first bought it from the wife, then it would be valid. But our Mishnah implies that after it was sold, the Mocher Sadeh, we sold the field, and then the Kospid Yishon HaLekeach, and then the first wife writes out to the Lekeach, Dinu Dvorim Ein Le'imach, implying that she did it after the husband had agreed to the sale, and that's the case where the Mishnah in Gittin is saying that it doesn't, that the sale is, that the sale is no good, because she can say, Nachas Ruach HaSisi L'Bailu. So in our Mishnah, why are we saying that? Why are we saying that she has in fact waived her rights? And the answer is Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Chista, Loi Kasha Horav Meir Horav Yehuda. The answer is that the Mishnah over here and the Mishnah in Gittin are talking about two different Tanoim, are according to two different Tanoim. The Tanya we learn in a Braisa. Kosav Larishan V'loi Chosmaloi. Suppose that the husband wrote out a bill of sale for one buyer, so he was going to sell the field to Reuven. V'loi chosmaloi, she didn't sign on it, so she didn't sign off on it as well, so she didn't agree to that sale, L'sheni v'chosmaloi, then he wrote out a shtar for another buyer on another field, v'chosmaloi, and she did sign off on that. So further on, the Gemara is going to discuss, are we talking about one buyer or two different buyers? Right now, the Gemara doesn't really know of that distinction yet. But right now, Rashi explains that we are in fact talking about a different buyer. Further on, the Gemara is going to say the possibility that maybe we're talking about all one buyer who wanted to buy the field and the deal fell through because she wouldn't sign off on it. And now after the fact, she agrees to it. Anyway, but right now we don't have that. So she didn't sign off on the first one. Therefore, the deal fell through, and therefore the husband wrote a different shtar for a different buyer on a different field. Ibduk subasa divir a mayor. So the mayor says, if there's no other bnei churin to collect from, then she's lost her ksuba, meaning she's not going to be able to collect her ksuba, because what's going to happen in this case? The lekeach can say hinachti loch mokem ligbas hemenu. After all, I left you a place to collect from. I bought one field. It wasn't necessarily one of those three fields that we were talking about before that's reserved for her. So it's a regular sale of the husband's field. When I bought it, there were plenty of other fields available. The fact that afterwards, by now, by the time you come to collect your ksuba, years later, there are no fields left. Reb Meir says that doesn't matter. She can't collect from this one lekeach.
She can't
collect from this one lekeach where she signed off for him. On the other hand, Reb Yehuda Omer, Yecholi Shetomer Nachasua Chasisi Labayli. Reb Yehuda says no. She can collect from the second buyer, the one who wound up with the field, because she can say a Nachasua Chasisi Labayli. The only reason I agreed to that sale is to make Nachasua for my husband. Atem Malachem Alai. So what do you want? What do you want from me? The fact is, I still have rights to this field because I never meant to give it away completely.
But I wouldn't buy it if I wouldn't know that you had the nachsuach.
Okay, but the point is, he should realize, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, he should realize that she would have that argument of nachsuach, and therefore be careful not to buy it or to arrange it another way. Like we said before, for example, he could make arrangements with the wife first and then with the husband, and that would be valid, because if she agrees to it at that point, she can't say nachsuach hasik to the baili, because she did it before her husband did.
She did it only because of...
Fine, well, yeah. So anyway, so therefore, fine. So our Mishnah that's saying dinur dvorim ein le'imach means she hasn't completely waived her rights. She is in fact entitled to collect that field by way of the second wife. That would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Meanwhile, the Mishnah that says mechle batel, or the other way around, actually, the Mishnah in Gittin that says mechle batel would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. She can say nachasua chasisi le'bayim. Our Mishnah that says that after all, she has waived her rights to collect from the Lekeach, and the only reason she's able to collect it is because she's going by way of somebody else. Remember, we're saying she can't collect from the Lekeach himself. Only because there's another wife involved is she able to collect from her, then that would be according to the mayor.
But she can, Lepoil.
Lepoil, she can, but the fact is she's not able to do it directly from the Lekeach. So she
has to give it back to him.
But ultimately, that's the point. Ultimately, she's going to have to give it back to him. That would be according to the mayor, that it was a valid sale from her point of view. So, Ibduk Subasa, had there not been another wife, then the mayor would say she's stuck. She can't collect anything. Yeah. So therefore, that's how we would explain it, that we're talking according to two different tanoim. But the Gemara asks, the Rebbe sasim lahocha k'rameir v'sasim lahosim k'rabiyoda. So you're telling me that Rebbe made a stam mishnah over here like Rameir and a stam mishnah there like Rabbi Yehuda. We don't usually have that stam mishnah and a mayor. Period. Once in a while, we have the Gemara will tell us that a stam mishnah is according to a different tana, but ordinarily we try not to do that. So how does that work? The answer is, I'm going to pop up a grush of a divrei hakol. So the papa says no, because our Mishnah is talking about where she was divorced, and after she was divorced, she wrote dinur dvarim ein limach. Well, obviously, then there's no nachas ruach hasis labayli. They're not married anymore. So that's why our Mishnah would be saying that it does work.
Is that seen in two different Mishnahs?
So in other words, the papa would say, rather than having to say two Mishnayos are according to two different Tanoim, better to say that they all go according to one Tana, and one Mishnah is talking about while she's married, and the other one is talking about after she's divorced. Rav Ashi or Makula to Mary, Rav Ashi gives a different answer. You could say, we don't even have to say that we're talking about the Or Mishnah is talking about that she wrote the Dinu Dvarim Ein Le'imach after she's divorced, and we could also say that both of them go like Rav Meir. You know when Rav Meir is saying over there that mechay bottle, because he doesn't hold of nachas ruach hasisa lebaili, is only when you have two different buyers. So like this, he was going to sell it to Reuven and she didn't sign off on it. So therefore Reuven said, you know what, I can't be bothered. Because eventually it means that she still has a shibud on it. It means therefore that I'm taking too much of a risk that she may take away the field from me to pay off her ksuba. So therefore the deal falls through. Then the husband finds Shimon and wants to sell the field for it to him. And then he writes out a shtar and he or she does agree to it. So then the Amrila, we tell her, if you had been wanting Nachasurach Hasisa Labaili, Lakama, Ibari Lachlamabad, you would have already done it by the first one. The fact that you didn't do it by the first one showed that you don't really care about Nachasurach Hasisa Labaili. Now, of course, there is the point that you could say that maybe Faker, because she didn't do it the first time, therefore that caused friction. But nevertheless, Reb Meir is saying that still she might have thought ahead. She might have realized to that, but whatever the case, it's not a valid enough claim of Nachasurah Hasisa Labaili. Avable, a Keach Echad, but if it's all the same buyer, he was going to sell it to Reuven, and the deal fell through, and now he's still going to sell it to Reuven. I feel it, Reb Meir Moida, then even Reb Meir is going, even Reb Meir would agree that we can say Nachasurah Hasisa Labaili because it's the same buyer after all. Tosfos actually discusses some of the ins and outs over here. One thing Tosfos points out, an interesting point, is that we're talking about over here, she would actually write on the same shtar of the husband. So therefore, automatically when he brings out his shtar, then right away you have, or the other way around, if we bring out her shtar, then right away we have the shtar of the husband with it, saying that I'm selling the field. So then she can say, so then there's more reason to say Nachasura Hasisa Labaili, as opposed to if she writes it out as a separate shtar, then not necessarily would we say that, because then they have a separate shtar. It's possible to actually bring out her shtar without the shtar from the husband.
Either way, when they're in a situation where they're having a hard time to put food on the table, that's the only way we can.
If they both agree, fine.
The only way we can put food on the table if we sell this field, which is.
Right, but in that case.
She has a spot, so we have to have food on the table.
Right, fine. But in that case. So that's Tosfos says that, first of all, if they write out a separate shtar, then that would actually work. Then we don't say Nachasurach Hasisa Labaili. What we're talking about over here is where they write it on the same shtar. Second of all, again, you can arrange it with her and then with him. And you have different possibilities how to make it work that it will be that the sale will go through and she is in fact waiving her ksuba. But here we're trying to figure out what's the case of our Mishnah where she's waiving her rights and in fact she doesn't have the right to collect, but yet not contradict the Mishnah in Gittin. So now we're saying again that Rav Ashi is distinguishing between whether it's the same buyer the whole time, or where then Rav Meir would say Rav Meir would agree that we say Nachasura Hasisa Labaili. So therefore she hasn't really waived her rights at all. Would keep in mind, in the case of our Mishnah, if she doesn't waive her rights at all, means she can collect directly from the Lekeach. She doesn't have to go through the second one. She doesn't have to go through the second wife. But yeah, so you're saying, practically speaking, if they really need to do this because they're short on money, fine. There are various ways where they can arrange it where, in fact, that will be able to happen. The buyer can arrange it with her first. Tosfos is saying over here, she can write her shtar on top of the husband's shtar, and that would work. And then
chazakah would also help, right?
Well, once he does chazakah, then that means that he's made a full kinyan on it. But still, if we say nachasurach hasisa labaili, it would still mean that she'd be entitled to collect it later for her ksuba. But if she's waiving her rights completely, then So. So therefore, so our Mishnah is talking about where there was a different buyer beforehand, where again he was trying to sell it to Reuven and it didn't go, and then because she didn't want to sign off on it, and now he's selling it to Shimon. So therefore, when she wrote Dinu Dvarim, then it means that means the husband had previously written a shtar for somebody else. And now we're selling it to a different buyer. So that is where Reb Meir would say that. So now Reb Meir would say that 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 that. Uh, So now the mayor would say ibduk subasa, that she loses the chance to collect uksuba, which is exactly what our Mishnah is saying. She can't collect it from that lekeach anymore because that's what we're talking about. So here we're talking about two buyers. The Mishnah in Gittin, we're talking about one buyer. We're talking about it's all the same buyer the whole time.
Oh, so that's how it's ended.
So that's another way that Ravashi, that's another way that Ravashi has to answer it, right? Continues the Gemara. So now the Gemara is going to start a new discussion, which is going to relate back to our Mishnah. Tanan Hossam. We learn in a Mishnah, also in Gittin, Ein Nefroin Min Hossam Meshabodim Makam Shiyash Min Hossam Min Echorin, a Baal Choyv of any kind cannot collect from the Chosim Meshabodim where there are Nechosim Bnei Chorin available. Meaning, so Reuven borrowed money from the regular case. Reuven borrowed money from Shimon. Now Shimon is coming to collect because Reuven hasn't paid off the debt. So now, if Reuven still owns any fields, then then Shimon has to collect Dafka from those. He can't go and say to Levi, well, you bought fields from Reuven. I have a shibud on them. He can't collect from that only if there are no Nechosim Bnei Chorin available. Even if the ones that Reuven still has are only Ziburis, even though a Baal Chayv is usually supposed to collect from Beinonis, but the fact is that here there are Nechosim Bnei Chorin available, so he has to collect from that.
You can't say that the reason I lent you money is because I wanted to get the Beinon.
No.
I wouldn't do it for
if no, Vapash does not, because the fact that he's still going to get Karkav, so that wouldn't be Nihilas Delas. We wouldn't say that the door is going to be locked against Leuven because of that yet. There is an interesting point, actually, that Pnei Yeshua talks about in our Gemara over here. There are really two ways of understanding why that din is. Is it mainly in order to, one way of looking at it is mainly in order to safeguard the rights of the Lekeach. After all, he did. He bought a property. We shouldn't take it away from him unnecessarily. Or is it more because the Baal Choyv is not losing out? So what? So he's getting Ziburis. Big deal. Okay, he's still getting land after all. It just means he's going to get a larger amount of land because a larger amount of Ziburis is going to be equivalent to a certain amount of Beninus. So therefore he goes on to explain that now when the Gemara is going to ask a question about this, the underlying svara between the two possibilities is which of those two factors is the more important. So the Gemara asks, Iboilu, Ishtaduf Bnei Chori Mahu. What happens if there are Bnei Chorin, but they were wounded? So what happened was Levi bought property from Reuven. So now if at that point Shimon was going to collect, then we know Shimon could collect only from Reuven's Bnei Chorin, not from Levi's, as we just said. But what happens if after Levi had bought, now Reuven's field is wounded? Ishtaduf literally means that there was shidofin, which is a disease with a blast or a strong wind or some kind of disease or something that causes the kernels.
One of the shidofins.
Shidofin miyarokin, yeah, it's mentioned. Okay. No, it's mentioned. It's mentioned.
By the Marcus.
Yeah, not by the Marcus, no.
Warning.
Oh, yeah. You have in the Torah, shidofin miyarokin, yeah.
But one of the warnings or one of the Marcus says that everything's going to be knocked out.
No, that's not. It doesn't use the word shidofen over there. But anyway. But more generally, ishtadif means that it was ruined. So now the Bnei Chorin are ruined. Mahu delitrif memeshabi. Can the Baal Choyv now collect from the Chosim Meshabadim? Because so here's where the Pnei Yeshua says that's going to make a difference of the two Svaris that we said. If the Svara is mainly in order to protect the Lekeach, well, still, the fact that the field was ruined after he bought it, that's not his problem. Why should we put him on the hook? On the other hand, if we say it's because the Baal Choyv doesn't lose out from collecting from the Chosim Meshabadim, now he does lose out from it because they're not available. Yeah. By the way, the Ritva points out, he says that maybe even this din would apply not only if they were ruined, but also if they're unavailable for some other reason. He gives an example. Let's say, for example, it turns out that the only Nechosim Bnei Chorin, the only Nechosim that Reuven still owns that are available are in Medina Sayyam. Are we going to expect them to schlep all the way to Medina Sayyam in order to take possession of those fields? Or he gives another example. Let's say they were not even in such a faraway country, but let's say a war broke out between two adjacent countries. So now you can't go anymore to collect them. Anyway, yeah. That's the question. Toshmas, and now let's try to prove from our Mishnah. Kosev, or from the Braisa that we quoted before, actually in connection with our Mishnah. We said Kosev Ludishin Vele Chosmaloi. We said if a husband wrote out a bill of sale to sell a field to the first one, Vele Chosmaloi, and the wife didn't sign off on it. So therefore the sale fell through. Lasheni Vachosmaloi, then he wanted to sell it to a second person and she did sign off on it. Ibduk Subasa Divir Rameir. So we said Rameir would say that she lost her opportunity to collect Uksuba. Now, Now, if you're going to tell me that when the Bnei Chorin are not available because they were ruined, then you can collect from the Shabbatim, then let's revisit that. Granted that she lost her ksuba, she lost the ability to collect the ksuba from the second one because she wrote out to him, but shouldn't she at least be able to collect from property that he sold to the first one? So actually, then we have to say then that the Gemara is going to say that that actually we're not talking about the first sale necessarily fell through because of this. And this would also answer what we were saying before. Why is it that she can't claim by the second one, Nachas Ruach, Hasiz of the Baili, according to the mayor? The first sale did go through. The guy is willing to buy it, after all, realizing that he's taking a bit of a risk. But now, when it came to the second one, the second one says, I want to be smarter than that. I don't want to have any risk here at all. So now the fact is he did sell property to the first one. So why is Reb Meir saying that she lost her ability to collect her ksuba at all? She should be able to at least to collect from the first one. Because after all, yes, you could say the second one was able to say till now, because there's something else available for you to collect from, namely from the first one. But now, in effect, the second one is ruined. It's the equivalent of ishtaduf, because after all, she can't collect from it. She wrote Dinu Dvarim Ein Leimach. So she should be able to collect at least from the first one. And yet we're saying Ibduk Subasa, implying that not, because each one of them can tell her. The first one can tell her Nachli L'cham Mokim Ligbus, because when I bought the first one, there was still other Nechasim Necharin available. The second one can say, listen, you wrote out to me Dinu Dvarim Ein Leimach. So therefore she's stuck. But if we say that in the case of a regular Baal Choy, where the field was ruined, that she could collect from the other one, from the Chasim Shabbatim, then she should be able to collect in this case from the first one, Merush and Mir Tigbi. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, my Ibda Mishedin. You're right. Maybe the mayor means when he says that she lost, it means she only lost the ability to collect from the second one, but she could still collect from the first one. But Amar Rav Shtei Chuvas Bedaber. Rava says, no, there's two ways that we can refute that. Chada de Ibda Lagami, Mashman. And one, the word Ibda implies that she lost it completely. The Lashon Ibda does not suggest that she only lost the ability to collect from the second one. It sounds like she lost completely the ability to collect from either the first or the second one. But oi, Tanya, furthermore, we learn in a Braisa, Lovam in a Echod, Umachon Chos of Lashnayim. Suppose that what person borrowed from one person, so Reuven borrowed from Shimon, the Umachon Chos of Lashnayim, then Reuven sold his real estate to two different people, to Levi and Yehuda. The Baal Choy of Shimon writes out a document to Yehuda saying, Dinu Dvorim Ein Leimach. Then he's not able to collect from Levi either. Because Levi can say, when I bought the property, there was still the property which later on Yehuda bought. At the time, it was in Reuven's hands, and he could have collected from that. And yet now, instead, he wrote out to Yehuda saying, "Dinu Dvorim Ein Leimach." So we see that we don't say he just can't collect from Yehuda, but he can still collect from Levi. So by the same token over here, if we say that she lost, that the wife lost the ability to collect from the second one because she said Dinu Dvarim Ein Leimach, then she should also have lost from the first one, not like Ramach Meitzchak is saying.
Because
when Reb Meir says ibduk subasa, means she should lose it completely. Because again, the first buyer can say he nachti v'chamakim ligbis emenu. I didn't buy all of your husband's properties. I left some in his possession. So there's no shibud on me. And the other one will say you wrote me dinu dvarim ein leimach. And the Gemara says hosam ihu de'afsid nafshi b'yadayim. In that case, he ruined things with his own hands. In other words, we can say that the difference between that and the case of Ishtaduf, where the field was ruined, in the case where the field was ruined, nobody did anything to cause it to get ruined. Natural. Here, it happened natural thing. Here, she actually wrote out saying, Dinu Dvorim Ein Leimach, and the same way the Baal Choy wrote out Dinu Dvorim Ein Leimach. So Rashi explains that this line, Ihu Da'afsid Anafshi B'yadayim, is actually rather continuing what he's saying. So he's saying, I disagree with you, Reb Nachman Yitzchak, saying that Ibda means she can't collect from the second buyer, but she can collect from the first buyer. However, Rava continues, you still can't compare it. You still want to compare it to your case of Ishtaduf Bnei Chori. The difference is that there it was a natural thing, and he or she wrote out Dinu Dvarim Ein Leimach. Now that's how Rashi explains. Tosfos doesn't like that. because in that case, then Rava should have used the word Ella. He should have said Ella. No, rather the difference between that case and the case of Ishtadruf is that one is natural and one is Biadayim. So rather, Tosfos says that's the Gemara answering back against Rava, saying the difference is that a Baal Choyv, if he writes out Dinu Dvorim Ein Le'imach, he knows he has a debt to collect. So what is he doing writing out Dinu Dvorim Ein Le'imach? If he did that voluntarily, then he loses his opportunity to collect from either one. Whereas with a wife, the fact is, when she wrote out Dinu Dvorim Ein Le'imach, she didn't know whether she's ever going to collect her ksuba. After all, if she dies before her husband, then there's no ksuba to be collected. So therefore, so not necessarily, so you could say, in other words, that with the Baal Choyv, yes, you would say he lost his ksuba, but nevertheless, we could still use Rav Nachman Yitzchok's distinction and say that maybe with her, it means she only lost the possibility to collect from the second one. So according to Tosfos, that those words, Hasim Iyo Da'afsid Anafshid Yadayim, is the Gemara slogging up Rava's comparison. The Gemara is saying, you, Rava, are comparing between a woman and a Baal Choyv, but you should realize that there's a difference because the Baal Choyv knows he has to collect one way or the other. The woman, it's always up in the air because she doesn't know she might die first.
So the Gemara is going to try another answer?
So no, so that's it. So either way, we stop over there. So you do end up with a Machloikas Rishonim then, what the meaning of the Gemara is, and therefore what the Halacha is. Is she in fact Ibda Ksubasa completely, or do we in fact say that she still has rights to at least collect from one of them?
Now we don't say that this is a din from the Rabbanan that we want to make sure that she's going to have security, so you can't touch that tree.
No, because after all, she herself wrote out Dinu Dvorim Ein Le'imach, so she still has to. There should still be a shibud, and to the extent that the shibud can still apply, then it will apply. Like we said in the Mishnah, for example, if there's another wife who does end up collecting, she'll be able to take it away from her. But now if she wants to void her shibud, then fine. You know, it still doesn't mean. I mean, the husband still has the obligation to pay her huksuba, but she won't be able to collect from the chasim shibadim in order to pay it. If the husband has b'nei chorin, then she'll collect from that. If he has metalklin, she'll have to collect from that or whatever. Yeah.
She would be allowed to put metal.
Yeah, I mean, the shibud of the ksuba is primarily on land, but still, I mean, if it's not available. Okay. The Gemara continues. So what are you telling me? So far you're telling me that if the field was ruined, then you have the right to go and collect from a different field. Don't we have cases that happen this kind of thing all the time? In other words, the question is, why are you even asking the question? The Gemara started off with the question, if the B'nai Chorin are ruined, can you collect from Mishabadim? So Rabbi Yemer is bothered by why are we even asking the question in the first place? Don't we have this kind of thing happens all the time that we say that, yes, we can collect like that? Because we have the example, Da'ahu Gavra, the Mishkan Le'Pardesa L'Chavre L'Esoshnin, there was a man who had put his orchard, or his, Rashi translates Pardesa as a vineyard, under a mashkan to somebody else for 10 years. So Reuven had borrowed money from Shimon. So what he did is he took his vineyard and made it into what the Gemara calls in Bava Metzia Mashkanta de Surah, because they used to do this kind of arrangement in Surah. The problem is, now, there's different kinds of Mashkanta. Mashkanta basically is a mortgage. In modern Hebrew, in fact, they use the word Mashkanta to mean a mortgage, like when you buy a house or whatever. Anyway, the point is that now you have different ways of arranging that. The problem is you have to deal with the matter of ribs. Because, for example, if you say that you're going to be able to use this field for X number of years and we're going to deduct a certain amount from the loan because of it, what happens if the amount he gets out of the field is greater than the value of the loan? Then you have a problem of ribis. So the Gemara discusses a few different possible arrangements of mashkanta over there, which ones are also and which one is mutter. One thing is the Gemara says there's a kind called mashkanta de sura, which everybody agrees is mutter. What you do is you say, let's say, for example, this vineyard is mortgaged to you for the next 10 years. You're entitled to the payers of it. At the end of the 10 years, regardless of the amount of payers you've gotten out of it, the loan is paid off. So we're going to figure, in other words, let's say the loan was $1,000. On average, we're going to figure every year this orchard, this vineyard is going to produce $100 worth. So therefore it'll be. But even if, let's say, some years you have a good years and he winds up every year getting 200, or some years were bad years and every year, either way, we say that the whole thing is a roll even at the end. Yeah. So such a thing is allowed. There's no problem with Ribis, even if it does wind up that he ends up with more than what he started with. Anyway. So you have an example where a person did such a mashkin on his vineyard, where it was going to be for 10 years, but after 5 years, the vineyard got old and it stopped producing fruit. The vines got old. So the Baal Choyv came to the Chachamim because of a light tirpa, and they wrote him out a shtar tirpa, saying that he's entitled to go look for nechasim shabadim and collect them. So we see now this is an example of a shtaduf. This is an example where the original field is ruined; it's not usable anymore for the purpose that it was supposed to. So therefore. And therefore, he's allowed to collect from other nechasim. So obviously, the answer is yes. If the original one was ruined, you're allowed to. Why is the Gemara even asking the question? And the answer is hosam nami ihun inhu hu daafsidu and afshayu. The answer is in that case also, you can argue that anybody else who bought from this loiva after this mashkin was taken out, they've caused a loss for themselves. Kivan to have a yadi the pardesa of a dekish. They know that a vineyard tends to get old after a while and stop producing fruit. They should have realized they should have been careful and not to buy. So if they bought knowing that there's a chance that the vineyard is going to get old and therefore the Baal Choyv is going to have to look for other nechasim, then it's their fault for getting involved in the first place. But as opposed to ishtaduf, which is completely out of left field, you b'chlal don't expect something like that to happen, then you can argue that maybe not necessarily should he be entitled to. And the Gemara says, "V'hilchasa." The bottom line halacha is indeed ishtaduf bnei chori tarpa mirshabdi. Indeed, the halacha is that if the bnei chorin are ruined, you are allowed to collect from the chasim shabbat.
In those days, you had to really, really look into.
So you had to really look into things. Yeah, you have to realize also, you know, one thing that Gemara mentions throughout Shas is the concept when a person borrows money with a shtar, or when a person sells a field, there's a koil involved. People hear about it. So nowadays, actually, you have central registries, at least when of land sales, whenever you buy or sell real estate, you have besides insurance, when you have it's recorded in the county records office or whatever that such and such property was sold on such and such a date. For such and such price or whatever. So therefore it's easy to look it up there. Back then you didn't have that, but you still had a coil. There was a known thing that this field was sold at this time to sell to Pliny. And similarly also when a person took out a loan with a shtar, also it became well known. This is precisely why, by the way, we have a milval peh of a verbal loan. You can't collect from the chosim shabadim, there's no coil. You can't expect the buyers to know that somebody borrowed money val peh to know to be careful. So that you can collect only from the chasim necharin. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says,
is this the only case when the field being ruined? Is this the only case when you can go to collect, or there are other cases?
Well, yeah. If there's no bnei chorin, then he can go to mishabodim. That's the definition of mishabodim. But we're talking about if there were bnei chorin available, where they're supposed to collect from bnei chorin. What we're saying, if the mishabodim aren't available, so in this case, we're talking about the ruin. Like I said before, the ritva brings other examples where, for example, the field is in Medina Sayam. You can't expect the malva to schlep all the way over there to deal with it. Then that's also the equivalent of nechasim bnei chorin not being available. Yeah. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to bring another din. A separate din, which again is going to relate back to, which we're going to relate back to our Mishnah. The Gemara says, "Omer Abaye, nechosei lichva acharayich leploin." Suppose that someone says to a woman, "My nechosim, I want to." This woman is not yet married. He's saying, "I want my nechosim to go to you, but after you die, I want them to go to Ploin." So, in other words, he's not giving them to her as an outright gift. He's giving to her in American law, Lahabdul, they call such a thing a life tenancy, I think, or something like that. So it means, in other words, you're entitled to use this property as long as you're alive. But after 120, instead of you, Yoshim, inheriting it, I want it to go to somebody else instead. So then, the Umdav Nisis, now if that woman gets married, Baal Lekeach Havi, we say when she gets married, her husband is considered that he bought her property. Therefore, the one that he said, Acharayach, the one who should get the property after her, doesn't end up getting it because there's a husband instead. So her husband is going to end up yarshing it from her. Well, that's really, yeah. So the Gemara asks Kiman, well, which Tana is that like? Kihai Tana. That would be like the following Tana, like Reb Shimon. If a man says, "My nechosim go to you, Sora, and after you die, I want them to go to Beryl," I want them to go achrayich to Pliny. Yorad harishin u'mochar. So the Braisa says that if the first one, in this case, if Sarah goes and sells it u'mochar and sells the property, then hasheni motzi miyad alakuchas divrei Rebbe. Then Rebbe says doesn't matter. Beryl afterwards can go take away the nechassim from the one who bought it because he's supposed to get it after she dies. On the other hand, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says that no, the second one gets only what the first one left over. In this case, the first one sold it; it's not her nechassim anymore, so therefore it's gone. So therefore, so Abaye's din would seem to be according to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. The problem with that is me Omer Abaye Hachi. Did Abaye really say such a thing? That, in other words, the way Abaye is phrasing it makes it sound like she could even get married b'chatchila. And then that takes it away. That takes it away from Beryl. But how can we do that? V'ha'amar Abaye, Abaye himself says, Ezo Rosha Orum, what is an example of a crafty Rosha, which the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, that that's one of the kind of people who wear out and destroy the world. So what is a Rosha Orum? Zahamasi Eitzel Limkur Benachosin, Kereb Shem Gamliel. That would be somebody who, following Reb Shem Gamliel's din, said, advises somebody to sell the property. So in other words, if somebody were to go over to Sarah and advise her, you know what, you should sell this property, and that way Beryl won't end up getting it, then he's able to do that, but he's a Rosha Orum for doing so. Rashi explains there in Sanhedrin, he's a Rosha Orum in the sense he's not even gaining from it. He's giving her advice to sell. He himself is not even getting anything out of it. There are, in fact, some of the Mephoshim who learn that it means that not only the one who gives the advice, but even Sarah herself, who sells it, even though she is gaining something from it because she's getting money, nevertheless, she'd also be called a Rosha for doing that because she's causing that Beryl is losing his rights. So how could Abaye be saying that let her go ahead and get married?
He's going to ask, well, how could Rabbi Shimon give this kids to bad ages?
No, because he's saying what the halacha is. The fact is, ein l'sheni ela mashashi yodish. Nevertheless, if she did that, we can still say again, according to Rashi and Sota, she herself is not considered a rosha for it because she's getting something out of it. The guy who gives her advice to do that is giving an eitzah to do something bad to take away rights from Beryl, where he's not even betting for him. So he's the one who's called a rosha on
it. Can this person put a clause in saying with the condition that you can't sell it?
You can put in whatever clause he wants, sure. But
they can't sell it.
Anyway, so the Gemara answers, okay, Mikama Tino say, look, Abaye is not saying she should get married with Hatfila. Nisis Kama.
Right.
She's saying if she got married, then this is the deal. She's not saying they're happens. Not going to, yeah, where normally it happens, but still. Okay, Va'amar Abaye. Now Abaye says another din, which seems to contradict the first one. Nechase lichva charayich l'ploini. If he says to her, my nechasim go to you, and after you die, I want you them to go to Ploini. Umachra, she sold some of it, umesa, and then she died. Habal motzi miyad alakuchas. Then what happens is the husband would be able to take away from the buyers, because after all, he's considered the first buyer over her nechasim, so he would be able to take it away. But ba'acharayich miyad baal, but the person that the original nosin matana had said it's supposed to go after you, it's supposed to go to acharayich, to Beryl, he would be entitled to take it away from the husband, unlike the previous din that Abaye said, so we'll explain soon what the two cases are. V'lekeach miyad acharayich, now the lekeach, or the one who bought it from her, is going to be able to take away from the acharayich, because after all, the Reb Shimon Gamliel had said that the sale is valid after all. But then, at that point, we stop there and we leave it in the hand of the lekeach. So now, Rashi explains the difference is because the first time when the lekeach bought it, he bought it directly from the woman. So now the husband can claim, one second, I'm the first lekeach. But now that it went through, now that the husband had gotten them, now the lekeach had taken away from the acharayah, from Beryl. So the husband has no particular claims against her, against him. Therefore, he doesn't have the right to collect it.
The Beryl was supposed to be the last one.
Because he was supposed to be the last one anyway, right. So
he can't come to Beryl and say, I'm taking away from you because of
right. So now, according to Rashi, the implication is that we actually have to go through those stages in Beis Din. And Beis Din will have to deal with all those first stages. And then once it reaches the Lekeach, then we're going to stop there. On the other hand, Tosfos says this is called hafuchi matarta. This would be like, what are we going to go and Beis Din is going to deal with transferring money from one pocket to the other? We don't do such a thing. So the Gemara is going to actually ask how Abaye's did fits with our mission. We're going to get back to that in a minute. But Anyway, so Tosfos says it doesn't actually mean that, first of all, it doesn't necessarily, so some Rishonim say, in fact, it doesn't mean that Beis Din is going to actually have to deal with all these cases. It just means that eventually we realize it's going to reach that point, and therefore we tell them to begin with, this is how it's going to wind up. Tosfos, on the other hand, says, though, Tosfos starts by saying, let's say, for example, if after the husband had taken away from the keach, what if right now he goes and wants to make a pshara with the acharayah, he wants to go and make a pshara with Beryl, then maybe we would then that would work, and the lekeach would lose out. And Tosfos discusses maybe not necessarily. So Tosfos ends up saying that no, that like the other Rishonim say, it doesn't mean that we actually do this. It just means we realize that would be the end stage of it. So to begin with, we say it stays in the hands of the lekeach, and doesn't bother with actually dealing with these various claims and counterclaims. Okay, so the Gemara asks. So first, the Gemara asks, in our Mishnah, we said it goes round and round. Why in Abaye's case are we saying that stops at a certain point? And the difference is, because the difference is, in our Mishnah, wherever we stop, somebody is losing out. Because you have the wives are supposed to be collecting the ksuba, and the Baal Choyv had lent out, the buyer had given money for the property. Here only the lekeach is the one who loses out. Beryl is acharayich. The lekeach, we didn't give him a name yet, but he actually paid money for the property. He actually paid money to the wife to buy the property. The wife herself got it as a matona. The acharayich, Beryl also got it as a matona. So there's not really much of a loss if we're saying that they don't end up getting a matona. So therefore, we would rather safeguard the lekeach's. We'd rather safeguard the lekeach's rights rather than the other ones. If they end up losing out, you know, easy come, easy go. We got a matona. Okay, we lost it the same way it came, as opposed to Okay. So the Gemara says, "Ozo Raphram Omel Shmaita Kamed Rabashi." So Raphram went and told over the second din of Rabashi's to Abaye's to Rabashi, and he asked, "Mi Omer Abaye Hochi? Did Abaye really say that it ends up with the Lekeach?" We said before that Abaye, the same Abaye, said that if she gets married, then the husband is considered a lekeach. So Beryl doesn't get anything because the husband has first rights. So why over there are we saying the lekeach doesn't end up with it? And then, so how could the same Abaye be saying that there's a case where the lekeach does? The difference is Abaye's first din was talking about that the original guy said it to her when she was unmarried. Whereas the second din of Abaye is talking about when he told it to her when she's already married. So when she wasn't married yet, when she wasn't married yet, yes, it's true that she's likely to get married, but after all, not necessarily. But when he does it when she's already married, he knows that her husband, he knows she's already married. So my kamalah, acharayich likni baal lo likni. In effect, he's telling her the acharayich, Beryl, should be acquiring it and not your husband. There is actually a din. There is in fact a concept that maybe that you can give nechassim to a woman al manas that her husband shouldn't have rights in them. There is in fact that the Rambam seems to say that that doesn't work. So how the Rambam would explain this Gemara, you have various Nosa Kalim talk about it. But if we say that does work, then that's what we mean. Therefore, so the husband has no rights over it, and instead the lekeach has them.
Maybe right, he has rights as to.
He has certain rights. Yeah, he has certain rights. Right. Right, Okay, so that explains the difference between Abaye's two dinim. Okay, so the Gemara finishes off v'chein bal chayv. Now, the Mishnah had said, in our Mishnah, when we talk about how it goes round and round between the first wife and the second wife and the lekeach, we said the same thing is true as far as a bal chayv, v'chein isha bal chayv, and we said the same thing as far as a woman who is a bal chayv, that all of those, the same thing would apply if one of them wrote, then we go round and round. So Tana, we learn in a braisa, v'chein baal choyv v'shnei lekuchas. The same din would apply if you have one baal choyv and two buyers, which is what we talked about, sort of what we talked about at the bottom of Amud Aleph. So let's say, for example, so Shimon owes money to Reuven. Shimon sold two fields. He owes 100, let's say. He has two fields, each one worth 50. He sold one to Levi, one to Yehuda. The Baal Choyv Reuven had written out to Yehuda dinu dvarim ein leimach. So again, we can't say he nachdel chal makam ligbas hemenu, because in this case we're talking about neither field by itself is enough to pay off the debt. You need the both of them. So therefore, Levi can't. What do you mean he nachdel chal makam ligbas hemenu? If I collect only from Yehuda, I'm collecting only half my debt. I'm still entitled to collect from you as well. But nevertheless, he still can't see, he still can't take from Yehuda, but he can take from but he can take from Levi, and it was sold with Achrayus, so therefore Levi is going to be able to collect from Yehuda, and Yehuda then is going to be able to go collect from the Baal Choy, because he said Dinu Dvarim Ein Leimach, so it's going to go round and round until they make some kind of pshara. V'chein Isha Balas Choy v'shnei l'kuchos, the same way, if you have a woman who's owed a debt of Huxuba, and again, the husband sold two fields, where the two of them together are going to be enough for the Huxuba, and she wrote Dinu Dvarim, then you're going to have the same deal. So not just, in other words, the case of our Mishnah was that the field that was sold was itself the value of the ksuba. We're talking about also the same thing over here would be if there were two different buyers and one of them bought half and the other one bought half. And she wrote, Dinu Dvarim, Ein Leimach, to one of them, you're going to have the same deal. Now, Tosfos wonders in that case, why do we need to say all these cases? Once we say it in one case, wouldn't it be obvious in the other ones? And so Tosfos says, because it's one thing when you have the case of our Mishnah involving two wives. Here at the end, we're saying Isha Balaschoy. You have only one woman, but you have two Lakochas. In the case of our Mishnah, where you have two wives, you could argue that the second wife doesn't really have, that she can still collect from her husband after all. She has what else to collect from. The truth is, the Mephoshim have a hard time with that line of Tosfos, because what do you mean she has what to collect from? If she had to what to collect from, then everybody would be collecting from that, and that's that.
So yeah, that's what she. She said, like, you know.
Right, she said, Dinu Dvarim Ein Leimach. But the point is, we're talking about how does the first one, what does she have to collect, what does the second one, rather, have to collect from? That was saying, Yechol Libros Mimayla. In fact, the Maharam Shif goes so far to say, is there must be a mistake in the text of Tosfos as we have it in here, because, anyway, so the point is that in the Mishnah, you could say that maybe the second one is not losing out so much. Maybe you could argue she has some other way to collect without getting from the first one. But in the case of, and after all, the first one does have an Uli or Shibud, but a Baal Choy from a Lekeach, maybe you could say that not. Maybe he doesn't have any other way to collect. And then on the other hand, with the Baal Choy, you would say, you know what, we want to make arrangements. You don't want people to not want to lend money. But a woman, Baal Choy, you don't need that. So therefore, Tosfos says that's why we had to mention all these cases, to show that the same din applies in all of them.
Each
one is a little different, but nevertheless, the basic din still applies. Yeah. Hadron alach misha hayin nasi. Everyone.